Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. You know, it's tempting to make the Murdoch Papers hacking scandal just about the Murdochs. They are easy for a lot of people to hate. But as with many major scandals, there are underlying issues that also should be explored. Was the New York Times Jason Blair scandal just about one young reporter's ethics failures? Not hardly. In this case, we have commercial pressures for scoops and sensationalism, coziness between major corporate news organizations and the government, leading to law enforcement possibly even taking a dive on the company's behalf. And what about the basic question of who owns the global news media and what kind of world news that actually provides for an increasingly globalized audience? In the summer issue of the Columbia Journalism Review, Columbia University president Lee Bollinger looks at the decline of traditional television networks and the rise of new ones like Fox News Channel and Al Jazeera, and concludes there is a major hole in the world news market that could be filled by an American World Broadcasting Service, kind of a cross between NPR, PBS, and The Voice of America, kind of. Could now really be the right time for a new federal government broadcasting program? Let's hear the case from Lee Bollinger, president of Columbia University. President Bollinger, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you very much, Brian.
And I should say that your article has nothing to do with the hacking scandal and was written before this really blew up. But do you accept my premise that the scandal exposes things about the underlying world media landscape that you've been thinking about?
Well, it definitely does. I mean, you listed the problems of hacking, which are criminal activity and therefore not subject to free press claims. You mentioned coziness between politicians and the press. I think there's another dimension which may come out, and I've read about this briefly, and that is the use of the power of the press to create fear in people who, including political people, who would speak out by threatening to invade their privacy and disclose facts or make up facts. Mm-hmm. And that kind of intrusion in really bad ways into the political system is very troubling.
What does the Murdoch Empire signify to you about the place of commercial media in global journalism? I mean, we'll get to the new state broadcasters that a lot of your article is about, like France 24 and China's CCTV.
Yeah.
But part of your critique is about changes in the world of commercial news.
Yeah. Well, I believe in the benefits of a mixed system. I think the free market, unregulated by the government, and now I'm talking about press and speech, is really the core of what freedom of speech and press means in this country and in many countries around the world. So a free market is very, very important for a free speech, free press. But there are risks. It's a public good we're talking about. We need to educate the public. The public needs to have spaces in which they can speak and listen. The press is not just a commercial entity. So we need to think about this in terms of fundamental rights like democracy and self-government. So you have to recognize that a commercial system can get out of control, can become too pandering to public tastes, can be driven by profits to the extent that the public good is jeopardized. And that brings in other ideas like public broadcasting.
Right. And before we get to your actual proposal for an American World Broadcasting Service, let's build a little bit more of the foundation here,
mm-hmm.
because you note in your piece the entrance of various other countries into this field relatively recently. There is already the BBC World Service, of course, and more recently Al Jazeera from Qatar, France 24, CCTV from China. Are each of these countries getting into the global satellite news business for the same reasons or for different reasons?
Right. So what we're seeing on the global landscape, we're seeing a greater interdependence of countries. Our economy, the United States, every economy is now interconnected in ways that make us really dependent upon what happens around the world. There are issues like climate change, economic regulation, cultural issues, multicultural. These are all matters that require global discussion and, to some extent, global resolution. We are at a point, I think, in history where having an educated global population is important to everybody. It's important to Americans. It's also a matter of national building that is involved here. So CCTV is part of China's effort to establish itself in the world, and mm-hmm. the same with Al Jazeera. So we have more and more attention on the global issues and the global audience. The United States has not really focused on this to the extent we should, I think. Hence the idea of we really need to focus on or think about an American World Service.
I've actually wondered recently if the government of Qatar is having any misgivings about how Al Jazeera, which it pays for, has helped fuel the popular Arab uprisings of this year by being so critical of Arab governments year after year, which they are. Public rage could turn on the Qatari monarchy, too. Have any thoughts about the line they're walking there?
Well, I met with the leadership of Al Jazeera this past January when I visited Qatar. And it's an impressive group of people who are quite dedicated, I think, to journalism in the ways that we think of it in the United States, independent and reporting objectively as they see it. I think that there is a evolution of Al Jazeera English more towards that. Al Jazeera Arabic I can't really speak to. But I think there's a broader sense that that is playing to the Arab street. Now, the power of the government of Qatar to control Al Jazeera is ever present. So I think we would be naive to believe that this is really of the same kind of independence that we think of in the United States.
Columbia University President Lee Bollinger, someone who has also been, you know, a strong advocate for free speech and somebody who has studied and spoken over the years about journalism, if you don't know him in that context. So you are proposing an American World Service, like the BBC World Service, which precedes this show on FM 93.9, funded by the U.S. government. Why that?
Well, I think, again, we need a mix. We need the commercial broadcasters who are in a for-profit, market-oriented environment to report the news. We need journalism. I mean, I think that's the most important starting point. And we need it for democracy. We need it for our own ability to govern. But there are limits to the ability of the market to provide that. And having a government-funded operation like NPR, like PBS, I think brings enormous benefits of perspective, information, and journalistic integrity to our society. I think it's something that now in this global environment should be expanded to speak to the world and to come back and speak to the United States from the world.
And I should mention, by the way, because people always get confused about this, WNYC is an independent, not-for-profit organization, not a government organization, and we get less than 10% of our funding from the government.
Yes.
And yet the government plays an important role in making public radio, public television possible around the country.
Right. And we have a system right now where we have a domestic, largely domestic, public broadcasting. We have NPR. We have independent stations. We have PBS. And then we have, which does significant international reporting, but my view is not as much as we should have. And then we have government-funded operations like Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, which were really set up as American propaganda outlets to the rest of the world.
In the Cold War, to counter Soviet propaganda.
Exactly.
So what are they today?
So I think they are respectable. Respected journalistic organizations to some extent, but they will forever be hampered in their ability to speak to the world by virtue of the fact that they are set up as government organs of publication. That is, they truly are government propaganda organizations. So it's time to collapse that. It's time to take the NPR, the PBS that we have, give it a journalistic, a world journalistic mission, or combine it with eliminate Voice of America Radio Free Europe, collapse these into a global enterprise.
With Washington politics as polarized as they have been for years now, why think such a news service would be non-ideological? Why not think that, you know, like the rest of our foreign policy, it would tilt toward Cheneyism when a Cheney was in power, toward Clintonism when a Clinton is in power, et cetera?
Yeah. Well, I think NPR and PBS are the answer to that. I think over the last several decades, since they were established some 30, 40 years ago, coming out of the Public Broadcasting Act of the 1960s, I think any reasonable person has to say that PBS and NPR, with some exceptions, some mistakes, over time, have established reputation as a very, very good journalistic organizations. I think BBC on the British side has done this as
no
well.
No self-interest here in me not challenging that statement, of course.
Yeah. So I think we have in our lived experience the fact that you can have government funding of the press to some extent, not completely. Again, a mixed system is the best. That will benefit the society.
Voice of America, by the way, may not be broadcast within the United States. And you wonder in your article whether that's constitutional. What's the reason for that law?
Well, the law goes back to the 1940s, 1947 or so, with the Smith-Mundt Act. When these organizations were set up, Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, really to combat the rise of communism, the idea was that since these are government propaganda outlets, we must not let them speak back to the United States because that would risk the government using propaganda on American citizens. So they're actually forbidden under the law from simultaneously broadcasting back into the United States. In the age of the Internet and the websites, which you can go to and get these, it's really now absurd. But the real problem is that when you think about the freedom of the press and freedom of speech in a global context where we really now have instant ability to speak globally and receive globally, it is very, very troublesome from a First Amendment standpoint to have the government forbidding outlets like Voice of America from speaking back to the American people.
You don't think the U.S. is represented in the world by the offerings our market provides, like Fox and MSNBC at two ideological poles, CNN, which you mention in your piece as a straighter news outlet in the middle, plus NPR, which you can get overseas, plus Voice of America?
Well, I think the array of these press institutions is important. My view is that it's just not sufficient. One of the things we've seen in the past 5 years, really over the past decade, is a decline, a very serious decline, in the ability of the American for-profit press to cover the world because of economic pressures created, as we know, by the Internet and competition for advertising dollars. What this has meant is a closing of foreign bureaus, the ending of many foreign correspondents, the amount of coverage of the Afghanistan war is seriously deficient. The amount of coverage of China, which is extremely important to the future of the United States and the world, is seriously deficient. The market that we have, the press that we have, is just not able to do what we need it to do.
And you mentioned what to me is the biggest lack in journalism today, which is the lack of boots on the ground. News organizations, some have gone out of business, but a lot that remain have just cut back on the actual reporting.
That's right.
That they can fund. And whether that's local newspapers or whether that's, you know, major networks, you'll still get the anchors there, you'll still get the talking head opinion guests.
That's right.
But the actual reporting on the ground to find stuff out is where we're really suffering.
This is deeply troubling. And you take a war as the prime example. And in the case of a war in Afghanistan, if this had been 20, 30 years ago, every major TV network would have had a regular bureau there, a station there with people staffed. And today, I don't know exactly what it is today, but just within the past 2 years, only the New York Times, only the Washington Post, maybe one other. This is a very, very minimal coverage of what is extremely important to the United States.
Columbia University President Lee Bollinger, who proposes in the July-August issue of the Columbia Journalism Review an American World Service, kind of like the BBC World Service, to fill gaps in global journalism. I noticed, by the way, in your article that you don't seem that nostalgic for the era that we're coming out of in terms of American newspapers. Even though it's alarming that many are dying or laying off lots of reporters, it was still a monopoly journalism situation in most American cities outside New York, and you make sure to point that out.
Yes. I grew up in a family. My father partially owned and was the editor of a daily newspaper in a small town in the West. And I know what this is like. By the 1960s, 90% of all the American cities had one daily newspaper. If they had two, it was owned by the same organization. This is obviously not good from a free press standpoint, free speech standpoint. We want a plurality of voices. On the other hand, there developed simultaneously, and I think partly as a result of this, a sense of professional journalism within these organizations, a public responsibility. And if you speak to many of the editors and publishers of the major media of that period, they will say that they took monopoly profits, as it were, and they reinvested in very high-quality reporting. Economists to report on the economy, lawyers to report on the Supreme Court and law, scientists to report. This was, the real creation of the press that we have benefited so much from in this country. Highly informed, highly expert, and yet independent and capable of reporting what we need to know.
And yet, on the other hand, and though I grew up here and have lived most of my adult life here in New York, I lived for a number of years out early on in my 20s, just after college, and in media market towns with one newspaper or a morning and afternoon newspaper owned by the same company or
yes.
the same family, as you were saying. And in my experience, the one institution, yes, they had a certain amount of professionalism, but they were also likely to get comfortable with the local economic and political leaders.
Yes.
And didn't have the kind of sharp accountability journalism that I think every community needs to
yes,
have.
Yes, I mean, that is definitely a risk. So one of the things we can say is that every system, whether it's public funding, a publicly funded system or a commercial system, has risks from a free speech, free press standpoint. It can become too comfortable and too much a voice of the government, or it can go off into types of reporting that don't really serve the needs of democracy.
Which also means that, to me, what's happening now is, I think, a double-edged sword. Fewer reporters
yes.
on the ground is obviously bad for democracy, as we were both saying.
Yes.
But the breaking of this sclerotic model and the new startups and hyper-local online journalism, while it's not there yet,
yes.
also, to me, has a glimmer of something fresh and very important.
Yes. So I think we're in a time where lots of things are changing and institutions are evolving, and those that have evolved are changing themselves and probably getting smaller. But we don't know where this is going. But I think what we can say is that we are increasingly in a global world, and we do not have enough information about it.
You're not getting any response, are you, from anybody in Washington, Democrat, Republican, or other, saying, great idea, Lee.
Yeah.
We're going to propose this next week.
No, I think it must be said that politically not a lot of support for this from either side. It should be said that the amount of money here is trivial in the overall federal budget. I mean, NPR, PBS, $400 million a year. If you add up and if you doubled that, you would have an incredible capacity to do this, and it would be absolutely tiny in the budget.
I have to ask you about the Columbia University story in the news today for a quick comment. The student who was the main target of the drug ring investigation will be sentenced to 6 months. Apparently, he pled guilty yesterday to selling cocaine. Your comment.
Well, of course, it's always very sad when something like this happens, and it's a serious problem of dealing with drugs in America, and it's a serious problem on university campuses. Obviously, we take this very, very seriously. I'm sad for this member of the Columbia community.
Some people have suggested that while it's certainly not an excuse, the very high tuition at Columbia and just about every private university pushes people to consider extreme economic actions.
Well, I just have to say I think that's nonsense. The tuition levels only cover half of what it is that great universities provide to students. It's no excuse for illegal activity.
Lee Bollinger, president of Columbia University, in the Columbia Journalism Review. He has an article called News for the World, a proposal for a globalized era, an American world service. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. And coming up next, we mentioned Al Jazeera. We will sample from a documentary that is airing on Al Jazeera. It is about the lack of morphine. And anybody who's ever seen somebody go through surgery or gone through it yourself or anything knows the importance of painkillers, the lack of morphine and other painkillers in the developing world. And then somehow we'll go from that to Paula Poundstone, still to come. Stay with us.